Marcus, Jay, get in here. 15, 25 seconds later, the pair walked in, and it was the longest 15 or 25 seconds Chad ever had to endure. What's up? You don't look so good, Marcus noted, smooth and understated, opposite Chad's sweats and shakes. So smooth, he should have been doing a malt liquor ad. Can't let the job get to you like that. Chad got up enough muscle control to flick the name tag to Jay. Find this guy.
Paris, who is he?
He's a guy I want you to find, that's who he is.
New discovery? That it?
Jay's shrill questions and shriller voice weren't doing anything for Chad sweating and shaking but making them worse.
What he is a little cocksucker who stole a tape of Ian. It's my tape. I want my fucking tape.
And is that, Marcus asked, where we're supposed to find him? In the yellow pages under cocksucker? Tightening and twisting, Chad was a guy being introduced to the wonderful world of palsy.
Jesus. Jesus, is it that hard? Is it that hard to see? You go to every 24/7 mart in the city until you find a guy who works there named Paris. That's what you do.
Every 24/7 mart? Jay is stressing every.
How many Parises work at 24/7 marts?
Slipping into a delirium.
Simple. It's so very, very simple.
And when we find this cat, then what?
Bring him to me. Just get his ass here.
Fists pressed to his temples, Chad tried to squelch the mounting agony.
Oh, God, you make me hurt.
Marcus and Jay took that as their command. They went for the door. Chad, Dyer.
Marcus!
Marcus turned to see Chad's weak, trembling, whiter-than-usual hand stretched toward him.
Don't fail me, Marcus. Please, don't fail me.
Marcus and Jay elevated it down to the parking garage. Jay, with an overdone shiver.
Well, someone woke up and took a creepy pill this morning.
A Mexican guy in a red vest brought around Marcus's Audi, an A4. Better than a Beamer. Thousands less. Marcus was smart like that. Chad's two lackeys got in the car and went 24/7 mart hunting. Chad sat in his office, door locked. The upper half of his body splayed over his desk, head pressed to the wood so that his forehead began to hydroplane on the film of sweat that leaked from his pores.
I'm not well, he wept. I'm not well.
No, Chad, you're not, Angela responded.
Without announcement, without ado, Angela was, as she was so often, there for Chad, exactly when he needed her with severity. Angela was the most beautiful woman Chad could have ever envisioned. Angela was black, not lightly black, or black by definition alone. She was black as an endless night, as dark as an abyss. So much so as to be nearly reflective, as if her skin repelled everything else that was not already of her. Angela was the most physically perfect woman Chad could have ever envisioned. Her body without defect, evident even beneath the smart business suit and skirt, white contrasting her black she wore. And she wore the suit tight, tight enough to hug the muscles that contoured her frame, arms that were defined, breasts that stood, not sagged, elliptical thighs and thick calves, those draped in stockings, white, as the rest of her suit, which Chad knew ended just below her crotch, just below the heart of her womanness. And above the white stockings and under that white suit of hers, Chad was sure, Chad imagined at least, Angela wore matching bra and panties that were just as white and two times as sexy. The thought of her made Chad weak. Weaker.
Chad said to her, "Gotta get myself together, Angela. Will you make me feel better? Don't I always?"
Her voice was a deep whisper. Strip away the sexiness, and she almost sounded like a man just waking up.
"Why am I so sick?"
Her black hand to his chest. It rubbed it a little. It massaged it some.
"Is your heart? It's harsh, cold, and full of disease."
Chad, pathetic.
"It's my heart. It's because I love you."
This made her laugh. The truth and Chad's inability to see it.
"You don't love me. You love what I give you." "It's you I love."
His plea begged for belief. Angela knew better. She spoke as Chad's conscience.
"You love my touch. You love the way it makes you feel."
Hands to his hair. Her fingers worked his scalp.
"You love it so much you would do anything to have it. You have lied, you have cheated, and you have stolen for it." "For you, it was for you."
"How much have you embezzled from the company to pay for it?"
"How much?" Chad thought of all the will of instinct royalty checks he'd signed over to himself, and all the faked will of instinct advances he'd charged against the ban to cover his sleight of hand, so that neither the ban nor the agency knew they were being scammed. Never the big checks, small amounts, almost undetectable sums. A few $100 here, another couple there, all lost in the millions that flood from a band like Will of Instinct. But skimmed regularly, month after month, 1 year into another, all together it added up to
a few hundred thousand more.
More than $300,000.
The number amused her.
"You do love me."
Angela pointed at Chad's desk. Chad looked. On the blotter between the keys to his Beamer and a bottle of Evian natural spring water from the French Alps was a polished mirror, a stainless steel razor, and a packet of fine powdered cocaine. Just looking at the three, Chad was a man swept up in the rapids of pre-orgasm. Coke wasn't crystal meth chic or marijuana timeless, but, like the first 64-and-a-half Mustang to roll off the line, for Chad it was pure classic. To Angela, through heaved breaths,
"I need you."
She was unimpressed by his desire.
"You needed Ian. You needed him to put out a new record. You needed the money it would bring in to replace what you stole."
Her voice accused without compassion. A collisionist, all-seeing, all-knowing seraph. The combo weight of fact and revelation crushed Chad, made his body buckle and his eyes water.
"Oh, God, I was going to give it back."
The words drooled out of his mouth.
"I swear I was."
"And now you need the tape. Without the tape, you're nothing. And then you're finished."
"No. No."
Angela finger-painted cocaine onto the mirror.
"It's only a matter of time before they find out what you've done."
"You would still come to me."
He salivated for the dope.
Even if I had nothing, wouldn't you still come to me?"
The razor. The cocaine got hacked up into neat little rollets.
"Oh, Chad, let's not think of such terrible things."
"I'm sick."
Tears filled his voice.
"So sick."
"Here, baby, let me make it all better."
Angela's fingers coiled Chad's hair, directed his head down to the mirror. Chad handled things from there, a healthy sniff. The coke married his physiology,
renewed him with vigor, strength, confidence, and other imitations of vitality.
I love you, Angela. Love me all you want, as long as you pay cash.
From Ogden Street, in the traditionally Jewish Fairfax district, you could see Television City, the CBS complex where CBS taped a lot of their CBS shows. You could quite literally see success and glamour and all the other trappings of showbiz. That view, that angle of Television City from Ogden, from his apartment, was as close as Paris ever came to any of them. Until last night. Until he gave a ride to a grungy white guy who turned out to be a big-ass rock star. Until he stole some music from the big-ass rock star. Until that big-ass rock star got himself dead. On and on, domino affecting like that until this very moment. His apartment, the one he shared with Buddy, like every other apartment on the street and in the neighborhood, was a quadplex, or whatever the hell you would call it. It's what would have made for a decent house, split up into what were four shitty units. Inside, Paris went to the fridge, and downed what was left of a flat A&W root beer he'd been nursing since the night before. It struck Paris that now, by default, A&W root beer was his celebratory drink. It was the libation that accompanied him from nothing to something. In the future, he thought on, whenever there were good times, and believe it, brother, there would be a boatload of those, they too would be washed down with A&W. And no trying to stretch each can. It started to go flat, it started to go warm, hell, if it was too far away to reach for, another can would get popped open just like that. Yeah, it's good to be king. And then Paris thought of her. Thought of her again. How could he not? In the end, it all came back to her. The tape, the money, the things $1 million can do. How would she react to that? Breath hot? Nipples hard? The root beer can trembled. Paris's shaky hand made it tremble. Even now, even on the edge of everything he had ever wanted, she could still do that to him. The bedroom. Paris dug under his bed, his futon with a busted wood frame, yanked out a duffel, put the dad inside, slid the bag back where it came from. Good as any place to hide it. No sense dragging the tape around town, and he had to go out. He had to go see her. Damon hadn't so much as set one black foot outside his crib since he rolled in at all hours of the morning, and already he and his kingdom of drugs were worth $16,000 more than the day before. People in L.A. wanted to get high that bad. But even the extra money swelling his pockets didn't do much to quash the mad he had on. For whoever had stole his shit and killed his cuz, and it sure didn't do anything to keep him from getting all kinds of crazy with Kenny and Omar for not finding who had done the stealing and the killing.
What the fuck, motherfucker?
Damon screamed at his boys and the two new girls he'd swapped out for the other ones. Players got to keep the pussy fresh. Omar played with the gold ring on his little finger. Omar dug gold. He liked to own gold. All his rings, four on his fingers and one in each of his ears, were gold. His watch, a Movado, was heavy on the gold, too. Digger's smile, a gold-capped tooth. His suit, that was also gold. Gold in color, at least. Most people would say that Omar was being too flashy, that he was being too showy for a nigger. Far as Omar was concerned, motherfucking right he was being showy, but ain't no such thing as two. What was the alternative to be like his partner, Kenny, who even with all his ducats still rolled in hooded sweatsuits with one pant leg pushed up past the calf? Omar shook his head to himself.
You can take a nigger out of the ghetto, but he still ain't nothing but a nigger.
You gotta explain that shit to me,
Damon went on.
How some motherfucking white boy gonna roll up into my place and steal my shit?
Omar. Got lucky. Damon.
Shit.
No way he could have knowed you was moving pure horse. Hell, I bet he don't even know how much the shit he got's worth.
Fuck that,
Damon spat.
I don't give a fuck how much it worth. You think I give a fuck about money? You know how fucking much money means to me?
Hand to a desk drawer. A brick of cash got whipped out. Hundreds, with no more fanfare than if bricks of hundreds were sitting in every desk in America. Damon tore the bills, ripped them, shredded them. Was it 1,000? 2,000? 5? Wasn't nothing now, but a fistful of paper he slung at Omar and Kenny. Greenback ash that rained to their feet after an eruption.
That's,
Damon, talking about the cash, said,
how fucking much money means to me. What I give a fuck about is some punk playing me.
At least they got him, Omar pointed out.
Ain't about getting motherfuckers. It's about getting motherfuckers dead.
Kenny to Omar, wise ass.
Told you.
Damon didn't hear the crack, too busy strategizing on how to handle his business.
This other one, the one that did the drive-in, you find him, you find his bitch ass, and you find my shit.
Kenny.
Big city, man. You got the license off his car, hunt the motherfucker down, damn bitch. Get off your lazy nigga ass and do work.
Pep talks like that is what learned Kenny to keep his mouth shut in the first place.
Hell, fuck y'all. Get them Knicks niggas. Tie and sunder. Set them two boys on.
A thought came to Damon.
Nah, damn that. You get Bryce. You put Bryce on this punk's ass.
Omar, Kenny. They both got looks that could only be shared by two guys who just had hot coals duct taped to their gonads. Kenny, making sure. Making very sure.
Bryce? Motherfucker? What'd I just say?
Kenny got all quiet, as if someone might listen and hear and run and tattle.
Bryce is crazy. No shit, Bryce be crazy. Motherfucker plays me, you best believe I'm gonna introduce him to a world of pain. Now do it. The only thing I'm trying to hear from you is that some punk-ass white boy is dead and Bryce be the one that got him there.
Omar and Kenny left. Once they were away from Damon, away from the possibility of getting their asses chewed for talking back, Kenny was all,
this is messed up. I ain't trying to deal with Bryce nohow. You do the talking.
Poor bastard. Omar was lamenting the soon-to-be-dead driver in the steal drugs from Damon misadventure.
Won't even know what hit him. Oh, he'll know. Motherfucker's gonna have a long-ass time to think about it before he goes cold.
Buddy. Typhoon hard, he blasted into the apartment, his shock 2-1 mixed with panic.
Paris,
he called out, having settled on the fact, during the long, frenzied dreamscape run-walk home, that Paris could help him. Paris could fix things. Paris had the answer. He might not have been the poster boy for success through hard work, but Buddy had to give up that compared to himself, Paris was long on genius. Paris had told him not to hang with Alf. Paris had told him Alf wasn't anything but trouble. Paris! Nothing. No response. And nothing to do but wander the small, space-ratten maze confused. The shock-panic mixture coursing through him, readjusted in favor of panic. No Paris, no help.
No help. No answers. No answers. No way out.
Sooner or later, the cops were going to find the shot-up drug den. Sooner or later, the cops were going to find the car and bullet-filled Alf. And it wasn't going to take them any Charlie Chan Ching Chong reasoning to trace the car to Buddy. To Buddy, who still had the drugs clutched up tight in his very hand. Buddy's body did a scared little spastic jig. What did cops throw at you for being involved in drug murders? How many years did you get? The thoughts in his head stole Buddy's equilibrium. What was happening could not be happening. Instead of a drug money-fueled ascent in status to a place populated with girls and sex and wealth and more sex, his trajectory was carrying him north toward San Quentin, where his days would be spent as a fuck toy passed among gangbangers doing hard time, or members of the white Aryan resistance locked up for trying to overthrow the government from the comfort of their trailer parks. That vividly, Buddy saw his future. He laughed a little to himself. At least he would be having sex. Yeah, real funny.
Pierce!
He called out, and called out again. And again, no one called back. Work. That's where he had to be. The 24/7 mart. Buddy had to go find him. Wait. Dump the drugs first, then go find him. The bedroom. Under his bed. No. Paris's bed. He should hide them under there. You know, if the cops came, maybe they would... Buddy didn't know what they would do, but to his jacked-up mind, dumping the drugs under Paris's bed instead of his own seemed like the brainstorm to end all brainstorms. A duffel. Buddy tossed the brown wrap package in and slid the bag back under the bed. Out the door. 24/7 Mart. Here he comes. Paris would know what to do. Paris would have the answer. Paris would make everything all right.
We're looking for Paris.
It's in France.
Third time Jay and Marcus had heard that. Almost the third time. One of the 24/7 Mart managers had quipped,
"It's in Germany."
Not for nothing was he managing a 24/7 Mart for a living. Marcus, like he'd done twice previously, elaborated on the question.
"We're looking for an employee named Paris."
"What the hell kind of name is Paris?" the manager cracked. "That's some kind of pansy name?"
Jay bit at his lip.
"Does Paris," Marcus asked, "work here?"
"Sounds like a pansy name."
The manager was a white guy. White guys didn't like being managers of mini-marts. White guys figured if they were managing something, it ought to be IBM or Boeing, or at least, at the very least, they ought to be managing a McDonald's in some Orange County tract, our house looks like your house looks like their house suburb. Any white guy worth his salt knew mini-marts existed to be managed by Middle Easterners, Koreans, the occasional Hispanic, and the even more occasional black. So a white guy, working where only color-skinned people dared tread, was not a happy cat. This guy was not a happy cat.
"Sounds just like some kind of fucking pansy fruit name."
The day wasn't turning out to be any kind of a foot massage for Jay either. Jay came from a showbiz family, sort of. His father did makeup at one of the local TV stations in San Francisco. His mother? Well, for some reason or another, his mother had taken off when Jay was still very young. Jay's father had filled in both roles nicely, and Jay didn't much miss or remember his mom. What Jay did remember, even from a very early age, is that he loved Hollywood. He loved movies, the style, the glamour, the oozing technicolor. Whether it was the spectacle of a big-budget Judy Garland musical, or the somber realism of one of Barbara Streisand's later efforts, for Jay, movies were nothing but special. What other manufactured thing could so touch people, make them laugh or cry, or just bust out in song? Jay had come to Los Angeles, to Hollywood, to Tinseltown, wanting, hoping, dreaming of one day working in costume design or hair, or maybe of being a makeup artist just like his father. But more than anything, he had come to Hollywood wanting, hoping, dreaming of nothing more in the world than to be a part of the wonderful, magical, glorious thing that was movies. The first job he got when he hit town was in the mailroom of an agency. He got moved up to a desk. Then he got moved over to be second assistant to Chad Bayless. Now, here he was, not doing hair, not doing makeup, just wanting to get an answer about a guy named Paris and move on to the next 24/7 mark manager, dealing with how the hell did I end up here life issues. Jay said, "Is that a yes or no?" "That's a fuck no. Ain't no Parises here." Marcus, Jay, made for the door. The manager grumbled at their backs. "Waste my time, didn't even buy shit," and went back to mopping up where the smoothie machine had run over onto the tile floor. BH adjacent. B is for Beverly. H is for Hills. It's what L.A. landlords called their apartment buildings that were anywhere close to the 90210 vicinity. But all BH adjacent meant was you got to pay those Beverly Hills prices without the pleasure of actually living there. Kayla's pad, her pad, was like that, Beverly Hills adjacent. A nice apartment, nice size, more than she could afford by a little. Not by accident did she live that way, just above her means. It wasn't like she was trying to front, trying to live high for the sake of living high. Ask her about it and she'd tell you how it made her work harder, made her do the extras to get the cash to pay for what she had. Kayla was just that way. She was the kind of chick who could have had a lot of what she wanted on the easy, but what she wanted was to work for what she got. Swall was the street where Kayla's just more than she could afford place was. And Swall, Kayla's place, was where Paris found himself. He rang the buzzer. A beat. "Hello?" Even the bad wiring and cheap staticky speaker of the intercom couldn't thrash any of the sexy in Kayla's voice. "It's Paris." Another beat. A bunch of them. The buzzer buzzed and the lock on the door kicked back. Paris opened up and went in. Upstairs, third floor, Kayla's door. And Paris remembered. Kayla's face contorted with disgust. The door slamming shut. The words she tattooed on him. "You're a loser." But that was before. Before last night and this morning and an unbelievable hopscotch of luck and fate and chance, Paris was stepping to her different now. He was stepping to her with all the positive, reinvigorated juice of a dude who just had himself a full and complete million-dollar makeover. "Ladies and gentlemen, cats and kittens, please welcome your all-new Paris." Paris knocked at the door. It opened, and there was Kayla. As many times as he'd seen her, looked at her, viewed her, each time he had the same thought as the first. Of all her attributes, her tits were the least of her. To say that little bit was to say a lot. She had great tits. Real and large. Not mutant large, just large enough to fit with precision comfort into a man's wide and groping hand. Her two beautiful boobs swelled in an upward curve, ending in full nipples that always looked erect. In tight clothes, they looked like they could just about take your eye out. Still, her tits were the least of her. She was a hell of a woman. Particularly hellacious was his skin. Fine, rich, smooth skin that was even in tone and texture. The kind of skin only the child of a black man and an Asian woman could be born with, and that was the type of child she was. She was a hell of a woman. The rest of her just got better. Every miscegenetic mixed-race inch of her. Her eyes, of course. Sharp, narrow, intense black Asian eyes. Her face, exotic in feature. Her body, shaped, cut, defined like Michelangelo and them had worked on her. Her hair, so rich, a mane, so full, as if it too had been blessed with vital muscles as firm and toned as was the rest of her. Kayla was one hell of a woman. Paris felt himself shrinking, his newfound moneyed-up manhood withering in the chick's presence. She burned too bright for any faux self-confidence, for any puddle-deep machismo to long survive. Kayla went back away from the door, back to whatever it was she was doing before Paris showed up, cleaning or straightening or something, seemingly having only enough free time to deliver a scornful look. "What do you want?" she asked of him, but said to a countertop she was wiping down. Paris came in, closed the door to let her know he'd be hanging for a while. He got a noseful of plumeria. It always smelled like plumeria in Kayla's place. On the balcony was the small plumeria tree. On the mantel was her plumeria-scented candle. She burned plumeria incense and bathed in plumeria body oil. Plumeria wasn't the most popular scent in the world, so whenever Paris sniffed it, he always thought of Kayla. Seemed like ever since their breakup, he was smelling that shit more and more. He said, "Hey, baby." "Don't baby me. What do you want?" "I want to talk." Eyes rolling. "Like there's anything else you know how to do." "I got something." "Right." "I'm serious this time, baby." "Yeah, you're serious. Just like you were serious last time when you were going to get some money together and shoot a movie. When you were going to manage those singers. When you..." "This time is different." A tabletop stain seemed to have particularly caught Kayla's interest. She rubbed at it, viciously, with paper towels, a sponge, extra strength formula 409 cleaner. While doing all that, she said, "Sure." "It really..." "You writing a script? You going to photograph models? What's the angle now? What are you almost going to do with your life?" "I'm not running in a game. It's a sure thing. $1 million. That got Paris, Kayla's full attention. What Paris got, he didn't want, because what Paris got was a lot of rage. "Get out of here!" Words hot enough to singe his eyebrows. "Listen to me, baby. There's..." "I told you, don't you baby me. This time... this time is like the last time, is like every other time, and it's not enough anymore. I'm sick of the talk and the dreams and the shallow plans. I need something real, at least more real than what you've got." "Real like how? Playing the dead girl in B-movies? First you fuck, then you die?" "It's something, Paris. Yeah, okay, not much. Shitty parts and shitty movies, but I worked to get 'em. Worked. I can look at everything I have and say, I earned that. Do you even know how to spell work? Because if you don't, I don't think you'd so much as take the effort to look it up." Kayla took to sarcasm the way some took to martial arts. She could kill with it. "Screw off. I do shit for myself. I got a job." "You've got a job, or you're going through the motions of earning a living? How long before you tell yourself you gave the workaday life a shot and split it altogether?" "How long?" 30 nights at the 24/7 mart, and giving it up was an itch Paris was already feeling the need to scratch. Hacking away at Paris, Kayla kept on swinging. "This $1 million.
How many hours of an honest day's labor did it take to earn it? How much of your own sweat and blood and brain power did you put into it?
Paris's response was to stand there and rub at one leg with the other. Kayla's head shook, pure disgust.
Know what your problem is?
No, why don't you tell me what my prob...
You've had things too easy. You always got everything handed to you. A nice little suburban life in Irvine. White picket fences and little red schoolhouses. Ozzie and Harriet up the street. The Beeve living right next door. And Mommy and Daddy giving you everything you ever needed.
Sorry I didn't run with a gang or score crack. Would you like me better then?
I'd like you better if you were hungry. I'd like you better if you had enough fire inside you to go after something, instead of hoping things'll come your way. Hell, Paris, look at you. Look at your life. When it was time to go out on your own, you made the drive to L.A. because it's close. You want to be in showbiz because the lifestyle's carefree. And when you're low on cash, when you don't have ends for rent or food, what's the first call you make?
Paris opened his mouth. Kayla jumped him with,
After you've hit me up for dough, what's the next call?
For a sec, Paris's mouth hung as it was, open. Then closed without saying word one in his defense. He knew the truth of things. He knew the call he'd make. 10 digits, starting with the 714 area code.
Christ, Paris, you're too old to be a slacker and too young to be a bum. You've never been able to follow through on anything, and now you've got nothing to show for your non-trouble.
Hard blows well landed. Every one of them. They should have taken Paris out of the game. They would have. Except he didn't have nothing. He had something. He had a tape worth $1 million, and now he was going to get the only other thing he ever needed. Her.
Baby... Baby, don't you see? It's for real this time. Nothing halfway about it.
While he had the opening, Paris took Kayla by the shoulders, held her. Her deltoids, strong like the rest of her, bulged in his hands.
This time I'm following through. And once I'm paid off, you don't have to worry about going to auditions with 100 other girls for a couple of lousy lines in something that's going straight to Viewmaster. $1 million. Spread that around right, and there's a whole lot you don't have to worry about anymore.
Paris, I'm going to do it this time, baby. And I'm going to do it for you. For us.
A dreamer. A nickel and dimer. But there was something old shoe comfortable about being back in Paris's hands. Easy. That's the way life had been with him, Kayla remembered. The year and a half they were together as guy and girl. Real easy. But that's the way life is, when there's no worrying about a job or money. How could you worry when you didn't have either? Rent would get paid somehow. Food would get bought somewhere or another. And days would get spent riffing on better tomorrows. Tomorrows full up with fast cars and good restaurants and big-time vacations all paid for. In some manner. With a movie deal or a record contract or a new hit TV show that, sooner or later, Paris was going to take a swipe at writing. But until then, don't worry. Take shit as shit comes. Take it easy. And isn't that what had attracted her to him in the first place? Him over all the other guys in the city who thought they deserved some of what she had? His unassuming manner, and the pipe dreams he blew, that she got high off of. Yeah, Paris's hands felt real good to Kayla. So did the notion of taking it easy. Why not? She'd been busting her ass a good long while. Why not let a few things come her way? And she and Paris weren't all that bad together, were they? There was the fighting and the screaming and the fuck yous that got swapped between them. But that was nothing but hot love. Wouldn't most couples kill for a few seconds of heat between them? Jesus, did Paris' hands feel good to Kayla? And something else. Something more. Something that wasn't in his grip when he held her last. A little bit of authority. A little bit of sway. Was that a little bit of money she was feeling? For a second, things were the way they used to be. Old pictures and well-worn memories. Paris holding Kayla. Kayla smiling. The two of them together and good. For a second, things were that way. Time has a way of passing. Kayla felt herself slipping. Worse. She felt herself falling. Worse. She felt the trapdoor of a gallows opening beneath her feet just prior to the quick drop and the existence-ending snap that waited at the end of a short rope. The rope was Paris, and he was giving Kayla just enough of him to hang herself with. Uh-uh. Not again. Kayla had done her anti-Paris detox and her post-Paris rehab. She had done the revisions on the history of her and her man. The fights they had were just fights, not hot love. The fuck yous were for real. The easy was something she wanted no part of. So after that, after surviving all that, how could she, for even one fraction of one moment, ever fall for this man's half-baked, half-assed, half-planned, full-on bullshit again? She couldn't. Get out! No way. No how. Kayla! I'm through with it, Paris. I'm through with you. Get it straight. It's over. Whatever used to be between us, used to be. So go on. Get your big money, then buy yourself a life. What Paris wanted to buy, what he wanted, was Kayla. He wanted her. He loved her. He didn't have her. He couldn't have her. Not now. Not ever again. She was HIV positively serious. They were through. So Paris left. One last whiff of plumeria. Then he was straight gone. Should have hurt like hell. Him getting kicked to the curb one more time. Kayla with her screaming and her door slamming given away as a forget-me-not, reminding him again he was a loser. Nothing but a loser. And a loser was all he'd ever be. If even. And the pain of separation, the knowledge of the finality of things, that should have been just about unbearable. Should have been. It wasn't. This time, different than last time, Paris didn't hear the door slam or any of Kayla's shrieked assessments on his state of being. This time, different than last time, he didn't hang by the door crying and weeping and ringing the bell pleading his case for amnesty and forgiveness through an inch of wood. This time, different than last time, although he'd lost his woman, Paris had a bed, fluffed $1 million high to soften the fall. This time, different than last time, he didn't feel a thing. Concerning 24/7 Marts, Marcus and Jay were coming to find out they had a comforting sameness about them. Go in one, and you knew where, in all of them, to find the frozen burritos, which were across from the hot dog fixin' stand, which was not more than arm's length from the big guzzle cups that you could carry to the counter, where you could grab a fistful of Slim Jims on the way out. Seen one, seen 'em all. Marcus and Jay had seen six. The 24/7 mart they were walking into made for seven. One guy working the counter. Marcus beelined for him. Excuse me, we're looking for the manager? The guy behind the counter, nervous. Would this have anything to do with food poisoning? Not hardly the reply Marcus had expected. No. The guy behind the counter was suddenly all smiles. I am the manager, Mr. Bashir. How may I help you?
We're trying to find someone. A 24/7 Mart employee. Tired of Paris jokes, Marcus had modified his preamble. You have anyone working here named Paris?
Paris? Has he done something? Are you the police?
Jay.
We...
Tasting pay dirt, Marcus cut his partner off before he could give anything away. We're not at liberty to go into details. All we can tell you is that we're agents.
Agents?
Bashir looked the guys over. The suits, the sunglasses. He got hip.
Oh my goodness. You are with the FBI.
Marcus did a quick calculation. Nervous foreign guy, thinking he and Jay worked for the Gov. That could make for a very nice way to hack through a good quantity of bullshit. Yes, Marcus said. Jay,
huh?
Beat. Then following Marcus's lead.
Yes. Surprise. I am only too happy to be of service to representatives of my government.
Bashir couldn't flag wave hard enough.
Where else but in this great land of freedom and opportunity could an immigrant such as myself one day be given responsibility for all this?
Bashir spread his arms wide, accidentally knocking over the Chiclet Certs tic-tac display. About Paris, do you remember seeing him with a young man, early 20s, white guy?
A white fellow?
Long blonde hair, deep blue eyes. Jay got intensely descriptive. He had a sort of sinewy quality about him. Not a good dresser, never a good dresser.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember such a man. In the parking lot. I believe that he left with Paris. He looked so sickly, the young man did. But all white people look sickly to me. Such pale skin. Like...
His last name? Marcus asked.
The dead. Yes. It is like the skin of the dead.
Marcus asked again, stiffer. His last name, this Paris cat. What's his last name?
Scott. Paris Scott. But I do not...
Outside, reaching for the door handle of the 24/7 Mart, Buddy. He dared stop, door part open, when he saw Bashir and the two suited, sunglassed guys he was talking with. Bashir pointed a finger at Buddy.
There, that young man. That is the roommate of Paris.
To Buddy.
Come here, Buddy. These men are from the FBI.
FBI? That's all he needed to hear. Buddy moved, bolted. He had no idea where he was going, but he was going to get there fast as he could, fast like a rocket flying on a solid fuel of terror. Marcus, Jay, out of the mart and giving chase. But their hearts weren't pumping fear-laced adrenaline. Their legs weren't churning with a save-me frenzy. They didn't get close to Buddy. The L.A. heat stopped them from trying. Jay turned to Marcus, huffing, but not very much more than his partner.
What? He asked. Do you suppose got into him?
Displaying athletic abilities he hadn't previously known he possessed, Buddy made the distance from the 24/7 Mart back to his and Paris's place, at a dead run. Red lights got crossed against. The old Jews coming out of canters got shoved aside. Buddy wasn't slowing down for nothing. Buddy wasn't letting the feds get the jump on him. He had to get back to the apartment. If he could get back to the apartment, he could... He could what? Something, right? He could do something. Jesus Christ, there must be something he could do. Almost there. Almost to the temporary sanctuary of home. One more look behind. One more look to make sure the G-men weren't... From the corner of his eye, Buddy caught motion. Caught it too late to do anything about it. He hit something. Tumbled. He heard a squeal and a grunt as he went down. That got followed by the double sensation of smacking both pavement and flesh. Somebody else's flesh. A cop. No, not a cop. A girl. Then Buddy thought again. Maybe it was a chick cop. Except she wasn't in uniform. She wasn't sporting a gun or a badge. Just a girl. So Buddy struggled up to get back into the race for his front door. The girl. Oh, like hell. Hands snatched out, clawed Buddy's leg.
Let go of me.
Fuck that, you're not going anywhere.
Let go.
Buddy tried to kick her away, but the chick had him bear trap caught.
You think you can put me on my ass and keep running? You could have killed me.
Please, please. The FBI, the police, drug lord hitmen, Osama bin Laden, and probably Mossad, they were all at that very moment converging on Buddy's position. Buddy couldn't see them, but his new seventh sense of paranoid precognition told him they were ready to swoop down, sink their talons into him, then whisk Buddy away to a hell selected especially for him.
I'm hurt, the girl ranted. And I'm going to sue your ass. I'm a dancer. I've got a dance to eat. I can't dance, I'm going to sue you. Hell with that, I'm going to sue you anyway.
This was all too much for Buddy. Same as an engine running hot, he started to break down.
Just let me go. Please let me go.
He sank to the concrete, made a nice little puddle of himself. He cried.
Hey, I'm not going to sue you.
The girl's grip went slack.
I was just, you know, talking. Come on, man.
Buddy was scared and confused and hopeless and defeated, and all that came out in tears and snot bubbles.
They're going to kill me.
What? The girl's head whipped side to side, looking for street punks or stalkers or gangbangers or any of the other oddballs, wackos, and creeps people in L.A. mean when they yell out, someone's going to kill them. She didn't see anyone, anyone in particular, other than the elderly Jews and failed starlets who roamed the Fairfax district and who were currently gawking at a young woman and the crying man laying next to her on the sidewalk. The girl.
Who's going to kill you?
Buddy didn't catch that. Buddy was in his own freak zone.
I didn't do it. I didn't have nothing to do with it.
Wait, slow down. You did.
It was Alfonso. They can't kill me for that.
Kill you for what? You want me to call the police?
That Buddy heard.
No cops.
But they... No cops!
Having had things made clear for her, the girl backed off and backed off quick.
Okay, okay. No cops.
Managing up to his feet, leaning in the direction of his apartment.
Take me aside.
The girl gave a couple of nervous looks around, like she was scoping again for stalkers or bangers or visible wackos. None yet.
Yeah, maybe that's a good idea.
Scooping up Buddy, she helped him toward the door. Buddy was still panicked and frightened and all that, but not so much any of those that he couldn't take a moment to dig this girl, who had her arms wrapped around him. Blonde hair and a page boy, a face clean of defect, displayed beneath a jean vest, white t-shirt, tight black biker shorts, and construction boots was a tan, toned, fat-free, and fine body. The physique, the outfit, this chick was almost to the point of being a dyke, but her sexiness brought her way, way back from the edge of that cliff. She was hot, molten, ready to pour temptation, like Miss Anne Margaret in Viva Las Vegas, or Miss Anne Margaret in Murderer's Row, or Miss Anne Margaret on any day she ever drew a breath. Too bad. Too bad that she was so well built and so good looking, because Buddy's panic and terror were still just enough that his survival instinct had crushed his sex drive. Wouldn't you know, the one time he'd finally gotten a ripe one back to his place, he'd have drug dealers and cops both trying to light a fire under his ass. Once inside, the girl locked the door, pulled the shades. Maybe Buddy's paranoia was catching. She took a quick peek in the bedroom,
the bathroom. They were alone. Buddy slumped at the wall where the girl had dumped him, stared off in a daze.
"Want some music?" the girl asked. "How about I turn some music on? That make you feel better?"
Buddy kept his dazed stare going. A beat-up Sony, boombox with a tape thing. Except that one of the little speakers was fried, it was a stereo. The girl station-surfed. A few were playing tributes to Ian Germain. Lovesick chicks calling in, talking about how some obscure song he'd written in the middle of a drug haze deeply and profoundly touched, affected, and reflected their all-of-19-year-old lives. The girl skipped over all that, and some country, and some speed metal, lots of Mexican stuff, a sort of old Yali Maxwell song, and landed on "That's the Way of the World, Earth, Wind, and Fire." The girl asked, "Is this cool?" Buddy had that dazed stare down cold. The girl went to him, took his hands in hers, the fingers that had clamped his leg hard, now gently, gently petted his digits. She said, "Look at you. You're shaking like a leaf. It can't be that bad."
"You don't know."
Going weak, Buddy slid along the wall. The girl held on to him, held him up.
"Tell me. Tell me everything."
"It wasn't even my... It was Alf."
"Alf?"
"Alfonso. It was his idea."
"Who's Alfonso?"
"He's my friend. He was my friend. He's dead."
"Oh, God."
The girl's arms went full around Buddy. He fell into her, and if not for her, he would have kept falling until he hit ground. She was his strength and substance. He was her puppet. She rocked him, first like a baby, then to the groove of one of the legendary R&B acts of the 70s. With great imperception, the rocking turned to swaying.
"Alf said he knew about a guy. Just some addict. He moves drugs."
An echo cooed.
"Drugs?"
The swaying eased into a hint of dancing.
"And Alf said it'd be the easiest thing in the world. Go in there and grab some from him.
Steal the drugs." The girl pulled her hands in and pressed herself to Buddy. Their lower sections met, ground together. The subtle slow dance became not so subtle, not so slow.
"We cut it up."
Buddy, mind drifted on.
"We sell it ourselves. Money. I just wanted to make a little money."
"We all want something."
I wanted to be somebody."
More tears and snot from Buddy, as he drooled some of that oh my fucked up life babble that right then, maybe 1,000 other people in L.A. were cutting loose with.
"Jesus, I just, if I had money, I could have, all I wanted."
"We all want something,"
the girl said again.
"I wanted people to like me, you know? Fuck, you get some money and people, you know?"
The girl stopped dancing for a sec. She took Buddy's face in her hands. Something about her became real sad. She said,
"I do know. I know how it is. You want someone to care about you. You want them to know that you love.
She had trouble with that word.
"But they don't know, and they don't care, and you end up where you end up. You end up what you end up."
To Buddy, the girl asked in a way that made it seem she very badly wanted to know and with extreme desire understand.
"If love is so good, how come good love is so hard to find?"
Buddy was too busy twisting on a spikeate of fear, too preoccupied with survival, to get what the girl was rapping about. Didn't matter. She was done rapping about it.
Hey, she said, putting her recent thoughts behind her, being stoic about them. If you can't be with the one you love...
The girl danced Buddy to a wall.
The drugs?
I didn't want to deal no drugs. I didn't want nothing to do with them. I just wanted this one time to make this one score. I swear to God, I just wanted it this one time.
I understand. I really do.
The girl eased Buddy down, let him collapse in a heap on the floor. His lap got straddled by her legs.
There was someone else there. Couple of guys, I think. There was... They shot Alf. They killed Alfonso. There was someone else.
Flashback. Gunshots. Muzzle sparks. Bullet wounds and spraying blood. The blood. Visible or not, the blood was still all over Buddy. It drenched him. Soaked him through and through. Probably never could he clean it off. Time to freak out.
Oh, God! Oh, Jesus, he's dead!
Holding him tight, riding him, the girl fought to keep Buddy from going epileptic.
Come on, don't do that! Jesus Christ, he's dead!
You've got to hold it together. Her coaching was wasted. Buddy freaked on.
They're going to find me. They're going to find me and kill me too. I know they are.
Shh, shh, shh. Just relax. Keep it together. Sweet words. Warm breath. They tag-teamed to slow up Buddy's heart some, to coax him back from beyond.
That's it. You okay? You going to be okay?
I think... You're going to be fine. Her fingers stroked and curled Buddy's hair.
Everything's going to be fine.
Weird, but it did seem that way. In this girl's strong, gentle arms, it seemed like somehow all the jacked-up craziness he'd been fighting was going to calm down, ease up, and just maybe be survivable somehow. Somehow everything was going to be okay. But he was saved. This blonde bombshell of a saint, Mother Teresa, reincarnated as a piece of ass, had stepped off the cold, cruel L.A. sidewalks and saved him. He said a prayer, good and quick, for her sake, that while she was in the process of doing her redemption bit, he wouldn't drag her down into a bog of iniquity with him. Saint Blondie took a deep breath, her chest rising and falling against Buddy's, as she did a change-up of gears, shifting to an uncomfortable subject.
Now, there's just one thing more you need to tell me.
Anything for you, Saint Blondie, Buddy thought. Anything for you.
Where are my boss's drugs?
Beat.
What? Damon's drugs. Where are they?
Even after her asking twice, it took a second or two for 2 tons of obviousness to bash its way into Buddy's thick skull. This girl that he happened to run into accidentally outside his apartment wasn't just some girl, and he hadn't just happened to run into her accidentally. The girl occupying his lap was an 8-ball chick, a gangsta bitch. And it was 2020 hindsight painfully obvious she was getting paid by the guy he and Alf had tried to rip off. The guy who most likely wanted Buddy, and wanted Buddy dead. Quick, Buddy tried to jerk himself up, over, out from under, any direction away from the girl. Her body full on his legs, all he could do was fish on dock, flop around. From the small of her back, hidden by the vest, the girl whipped a nickel-plated .38, which put a stop to the discussion about anybody going anywhere.
Sit the fuck still before I open you up like a box of crackers.
Any sweetness and light the fallen angel might have had got tossed out to make room for a stone-cold stare. a stare Buddy responded to with whimpers.
And quit crying.
Mocking.
Oh, she's going to shoot me. She's going to shoot me.
That didn't help Buddy to whimper any less. With her free hand, the girl took out a pack of Camels, wides, slipped one between her full lips. Zippoed it lit.
What the hell you think's going to happen when you go around stealing people's drugs?
The sig bobbed up and down as the girl spoke.
You want to play a big boy's game. You got to play the big boy's rules. Now just shut up and take what's coming to you.
But first I got a couple of questions. As fast as he could get it out. I don't have the drugs. No hesitation. The chick pulled the cigarette from her mouth and ground the hot end into Buddy's cheek. Smaller around than a dime it was. But the tip of the cigarette delivered a pain greater, deeper, and longer lasting than he ever could have imagined any kind of known pain to be. And the smell of burning flesh, the sizzle that went with it, made the hurt come at Buddy in sense-around. He screamed, he struggled, but with the girl planted on him, he had nowhere to go, and no other options but to sit there and feel the burn. Finally, the girl let the burning stop. She pulled back the cigarette, put it to her lips, and sucked some of the smoke down into her lungs. She said,
"You can't answer the questions before I ask them. It's like Jeopardy. Even if you're one of them smart Asian fuckers and you know the answer, you gotta wait until Alex is done asking the question. You dig?"
A mumble, lost among sobs.
"Bitch." "Close. Bryce. Kay. Question number one. Think you might be familiar with it. Where are my boss's drugs?"
"I don't have the drugs," Buddy said.
His thought for the moment being, not having the drugs might equal getting to live.